Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will talk with physician and nutrition expert, Dr. John McDougall. Dr. McDougall is the author of the new book, The Starch Solution. He will tell us how a starch-based plant food diet can contribute to our health and longevity. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, here's an interesting study that shows that meat consumption is linked to diabetes. People who eat fewer animal products have less risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Incidence of diabetes was almost four times as high among non-vegetarians compared with vegans, according to a new study looking at Seventh-day Adventists. The Adventist Health Study 2 looked at 15,200 men and 26,187 women in the United States and Canada who were grouped as vegans, lacto-ovo-vegetarians, that's vegetarians who include dairy products and eggs, pesco-vegetarians, that's people who follow a vegetarian diet but do eat fish, semi-vegetarians, those who eat vegetarian diets most of the time, and non-vegetarians, the typical American diet or omnivore diet. Now, the lacto-ovo-vegetarian group and the pesco-vegetarian group and the semi-vegetarian group were all about twice as likely to develop diabetes compared to the vegan group. This is published in the Journal of Nutrition. Well, another study shows that vegetarian men weigh less and have lower cardiovascular disease risks compared to non-vegetarians, according to a new study that appeared in Nutrition and Metabolism. Researchers in China compared 171 vegetarians with 129 age-matched non-vegetarians and found that the vegetarian men's weight, blood pressure, triglycerides, and cholesterol levels were lower compared with the meat eaters. The vegetarians' arterial walls were healthier as well. Well, here's another study that shows that vegetarian diets help expel cancer-causing hormones. Vegetarian diets may reduce the level of hormones that contribute to cancer, according to a new study. The study observed how dietary patterns affect breast cancer risk by measuring hormone markers in postmenopausal women. Researchers studied diet records and conducted blood, urine, and fecal tests among women in the study's three participant groups. The three groups included a vegetarian group, an omnivorous group, and an omnivorous group with breast cancer. Results showed that the vegetarian group significantly decreased estrogen production while boosting the hormone sex hormone binding globulin, also known as SHBG, which is known for removing excess and unneeded hormones. The omnivorous participants with breast cancer had the highest amounts of hormones while reporting a poor fiber-to-fat ratio in their diets. The omnivorous without cancer did better, but not as well as the vegetarian group. The study's researchers concluded that having less body fat, eating less fat, and eating more fiber, particularly cereal fiber, worked together to lower estrogen levels in the bloodstream, reducing the risk of breast cancer. We'll be right back after this short message.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
Our question for today is that you recommend steel-cut or Irish oatmeal over rolled oats. Why? I've read that rolled oats and steel-cut oats are the same food, just cut differently. They contain the same amount of fiber. Even rolled oats contain the entire oat grain. Can you explain why you recommend steel-cut oats? Well, the difference between rolled oats and steel-cut oats is that while both remain whole grain oats, they're processed differently. Rolled oats are steamed, then they're rolled, they're steamed again and toasted, ending up as a very thin flake. Now, steel-cut oats are made from oat kernels that have been chopped into thick pieces. Now, I recommend choosing steel-cut oats, or also known popular-wise as Irish oats, over the rolled oats because they digest more slowly than the rolled oats. Like all other grains in whole or crack form, steel-cut oats rank lower on the glycemic index than the rolled oats. Now, the reason is that it takes longer for the digestive enzymes to reach the starch inside the thicker pieces, and that's slowing down its conversion into sugar. Now, the glycemic index is the measure of how quickly carbohydrate foods affect blood sugar. And the higher on the glycemic index a food ranks, the more likely it is to cause spikes in blood sugar that over time can cause genetically susceptible people, which is many people in the United States today, to develop insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome. Now, insulin resistance is associated with obesity, high blood pressure, elevated blood fats, and increased risk of type 2 diabetes. Now, while I recommend steel-cut oats, rolled oats are still preferable to instant oatmeal. Some brands of those instant oatmeals actually contain hydrogenated oils and fats, artificial flavors and colors, and unnecessary amounts of sugar and salt. So, rolled oats are still better than instant oatmeal, but I still recommend, if you can, get steel-cut oats and include those in your diet as the best type of oatmeal.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
And our guest today is Dr. John McDougall. He is a physician and nutrition expert who teaches health through a plant-based diet. And Dr. John A. McDougall has been studying, writing, and speaking out about the effects of nutrition and disease for over 30 years. Dr. McDougall is the founder and medical director of the nationally renowned McDougall Program. That's a 10-day residential program located at a luxury resort in Santa Rosa, California. And Dr. McDougall is the author of several national best-selling books on health, with his latest book that we'll be talking about today, The Starch Solution. And I have to mention, too, that Dr. McDougall has been a longtime friend of mine and colleague. We've worked together on many things, from vegetarian food products to radio shows to lecturing about good nutrition and health all over the place, and even way back to the days that I worked and lived in Hawaii, where Dr. McDougall lived and worked for many years as well. And Dr. McDougall, welcome to Health and Longevity.
Well, thank you, John. It's always good to be back with you and to talk to you. I mean, it has been a while since we've had a chance to share, but we certainly did spend some good years together, didn't we?
We sure did, and starting a lot of it off in Hawaii is a wonderful place to start a career.
You know, back in those days, I thought we had it all figured out and that everybody would be here in the, in 2012, everybody would be marching to the same band and all understand how to be healthy and everybody would be thin and type 2 diabetes would be almost disappeared, and it's just the opposite.
That's right. And here we are still today trying to teach this message, and it's getting worse and worse and worse, the diabetes and the obesity. But, you know, you're a unique physician, and I admire, since I first met you, I admired you for what you believed and what you practiced, because you promoted lifestyle medicine. You promoted a plant-based diet. You promoted wellness as the key to health and longevity and with your patients. And tell us a little bit, though. I know that it always wasn't that way. You were a typical medical doctor. Tell us how you first got started in nutrition and health and also lifestyle medicine.
Well, that was back in our Hawaii days. I did a standard internship at the Queens Medical Center in Honolulu. And then after that, I became a plantation doctor on the Big Island for 3 years. And that's really where I learned everything. I have to say, between 1973 and 1976, I learned everything I know today about good nutrition and about bad medical care. And they kind of went together. You know, I had to learn, first of all, that what we were doing for chronic disease was failing. I mean, it was failing not only because of my observations and my patients, it was failing because of every other doctor's observations and what the scientific research said. You know, you have to kind of let go of what you believe in, not only as a patient but as a doctor, to get on with what is true. And if you still believe in heart surgery to solve your heart problems, and you believe in diabetes pills to solve your diabetic problems, then you're going to keep with that faith, and you're not going to look for other options. And even though you're sick and miserable and dying, you're going to stay believing in the medical doctors. And the truth of the matter, as clearly published in the scientific research, is what we do for chronic disease does not work, hurts people terribly, and costs them, you know, personally costs them hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy this stuff, such as heart surgery for chronic coronary artery disease and diabetic pills and insulin for type 2 diabetes and multiple sclerosis drugs and arthritis drugs and so on. I mean, you know, these things are a proven failure after the last 30, 40 years of research. And they've never cured anybody ever of any of these problems, and they just compound the problems for the patient. So once you figure that out, and I figured that out during my first 3 years as a plantation doctor on the Big Island, then if you have an option, you know, you have a wide open vision for something else to help you, because you finally figured out the pills and the procedures aren't going to help you, then you start looking for, or at least you start welcoming other people's options on how to get well. If somebody shows you something that is, you know, so obvious that you can see it right before your eyes. You don't have to believe the person. You just look and you say, aha, that's true. And it has to do with a good diet that costs you nothing. In fact, cuts your food bill, and a good diet that's not only good for your health but good for the planet. And you know, I mean, some people see it and they go, and that's what I learned back in my plantation days too. I had a chance to take care of first, second, third, and fourth generation Filipinos, Japanese, Chinese, and Koreans. And my first-generation patients were trim and healthy, and they were living on rice and vegetables. Second generation, they included more meat and dairy. And by the time you got to the third generation, these Filipinos, Chinese, Japanese, and Koreans were just as fat and just as sick as anybody had ever seen. So it, you know, became real obvious during my plantation years between 1973 and 1976 as to where I had to go as a doctor. I mean, it wasn't something that I willfully chose. It kind of chose me. Once you see this, you can't do anything else. I mean, you have to go with what is true.
And you saw these younger kids nowadays, they're eating the wrong types of foods. Of course, obesity now is at epidemic proportions. The Surgeon General has said that if things continue this way, this generation, the parents will be outliving their own children. And you saw the beginnings of that there in Hawaii, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I clearly saw it. I was taking care of mostly adults, and I never thought that we'd have such a situation today like we do with the kids, with so much diabetes and constipation and obesity and acne. And I mean, when I was a little kid growing up, going to high school, junior high school, if you were a fat kid, you really stuck out. I mean, there was one fat kid in every class or every two classes that you were in. And it was real difficult for that child. Nowadays, 20-30% of the kids are, you know, way too fat, and it seems to be the social norm. No, things have changed terribly. I don't see an end in sight, except for the fact that information is becoming widespread with talk radio shows like yours, John, and with the internet and so on. So there is a large population of people that have just plain and simple decided they don't want to be sick anymore. And once they change their diet, they get well, and then nobody can convince them otherwise. I mean, when you lose 40, 50, 100 pounds, get off all your diabetic medication, all your arthritis medication, all your laxatives, all your antacids, and you got your life back, and you're functioning and looking 20 years younger than your contemporaries, I mean, who's going to convince you that you've got the wrong message and you need to go back to eating junk and meat and dairy?
And, you know, back several years ago when we were working together over there, what you were teaching became very popular. People were really learning about it. Then Dean Ornish's work came out showing that a similar type of diet program could actually reverse heart disease. But then we went through a period with Dr. Atkins and some of these high-protein diets where everything reversed for almost a decade promoting these unhealthy diets. So what's your comments on those?
Yeah, that was insanity. You know, people followed a message that was scientifically proven to be incorrect, and a leader who was overweight himself with heart disease,
yes.
Robert Atkins. I mean,
right.
the public, I guess they want to believe good news about their bad habits
yeah.
so badly that, you know, they'll take the obvious. I mean, something that's right before their eyes, all these fat, sick peoples and gurus and, you know, all the scientific research that says this is damaging. And they'll just discard it and say, okay, bring on the bacon and eggs. I'll have another ham sandwich. I do know. I see it. And I don't know that it's going to stop unless there's some way to force people to stop that behavior. But I do know there's a large group of people out there that do care about themselves and about their families and just want to feel good, look good, and function well and want to be out of the system, out of the medical system, off the drugs. And you give them this message, this very simple, cost-free message, and they take off, and they never turn back. And they look around. Once you discover this, you look around and go, my goodness, why doesn't everybody see this? This is so obvious.
It is. It really is. Now, just in the last couple of years, there's been a resurgence and a re-interest in the plant-based diet that you've recommended all these years. Of course, the film Forks Over Knives came out, which you were in, and now people are interested in learning more about the power of a plant-based diet for preventing, treating, even reversing diseases. And you have come out with a brand new book called The Starch Solution, which you kind of go the opposite way of those high-protein diets out there, saying that a starch-based diet, plant food diet, of course, actually is very crucial in preventing, treating, and reversing disease. Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, what should really glare is the fact that I called it starch. And that's hard for people.
That's
people
right.
have a difficult time saying that word. It's almost like a swear word. but it's scientifically the correct word. I mean, starch is the proper terminology for the food that we should be eating. So I've had to use that word, and I have to re-educate people to get them to start thinking in terms of starch as their food. Because if you tell them you need to eat a plant-based diet, what does that mean? You know, is that potato chips? Is that
right.
you know, beans or peas or what is a plant food-based diet?
Right.
I mean, maybe that's tofu. Maybe that's veggie burgers. Who knows? If you tell them they need a low-fat diet, that doesn't mean much to them either.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to find a word that really described what people are supposed to eat. And once they get this word, just this one word, starch, then the whole world opens to them because they say to themselves, first of all, I like starches. I mean, I think starches are comfort food. I'd love to eat more starch. I love rice and corn and potatoes and beans and pasta. But they say that those things are forbidden. Well, I mean, again, you don't have to believe me. Just stop and look around.
Right.
Look around today in the world or look through history, and you'll find that all large, successful populations of people throughout all of recordable human history have gotten the bulk of their calories from starch. And I think some easy examples are today Asians live on rice. And there are 1.73 billion Asians who live on rice-based diets, and there's no obesity. There's virtually no heart disease or breast cancer or prostate cancer or colon cancer or rheumatoid arthritis or multiple sclerosis in these people who maintain a diet of rice. You go back in history and you look at 800 to 1,300 years of civilization in Central America among the Mayas and the Aztecs, living on corn. They're the people of the corn.
Right.
You go to South America and you look at the people living in the Andes. They live on potatoes, still do today, potatoes being an ideal food. You go to Papua New Guinea and they lived on sweet potatoes. 92% of their diet was sweet potato leaves and roots. These are people without any of the diseases that we have that are really strong warriors and survival people and always trim. heavily muscular. You know, as I say, they do battle well living on potatoes and rice and corn and beans and quinoa and so on. And whereas we have a situation in our world where 80% of the people can't even enlist in the military because they're too fat and sick. And those who get into the military to defend our wonderful nation, 54% of them are overweight, you know, because they've abandoned the starch. So you can see it if you just stop and look what happens historically or even today as people abandon their native starch-based diets and go eat the good old well-balanced traditional American diet full of dairy and meat and oil. And, you know, those are the prime villains.
Yes.
And they get fat and sick. Now, you can reverse that. All you got to do is just make this little simple U-turn, and you reverse it, and you go from a meat and dairy and oil-based diet to a starch-based diet, and you solve all the problems. Now, it's so crucial that they understand that because you have to eat, and you eat for energy. And so you think about, well, where can I get energy from? Well, I get energy from fat. You know, protein's not a great source, but you can get energy from fat like you would in meat and dairy and oil. Or you can get energy from carbohydrate like you would potatoes, rice, and corn. Now, once you decide I'm going for a better source of energy, a clean source of energy, then the problems are solved. You just get on with your life, you eat all you want, you stay trim, your bowels work good, your blood pressure's down, you're off your pills, and you get on with other things that are important besides worrying about your health and your next doctor's appointment.
Now, let's talk about, because I think I told you before the program, I was giving a talk the other day of some research that came out showing that a all-plant food diet, actually it was a vegan diet study that was published, was showed that people that were on that type of diet did far better than omnivores and people on other typical American diets. And I was attacked after I gave that talk by somebody who says, I disagree with you. Your carbohydrates are bad and they cause diabetes and this and that and the other. You're saying the exact opposite here in your
right.
book. Tell us how a starch-based diet is helpful for those with diabetics and other health conditions.
Well, the first thing, you should be happy that at least somebody's reacting to you, because the way I've done dealt with all these years is people just ignore me. You know, I'd love to have the subject on the table so people could focus their attention on what the facts are.
Right.
Just take a look at that worldwide picture for a minute. I mean, type 2 diabetes is absent. I mean, they do not have it in parts of the world that eat a starch-based diet and where people are trim. You've got to induce obesity in the population to get type 2 diabetes. So you have to switch to the calorie-intense foods like the meat and the dairy to take and make somebody fat enough to get this disease. Type 1 diabetes is a little different situation, but it's also a dietary disease related to the Western diet. You know, people who say, I mean, I don't even get to the diabetes part with them. If somebody had said that to me, I would have looked at them and I'd say, you know, you're telling me starch is bad, right? You're telling me rice is bad because rice turns to sugar, which turns to fat, which makes you fat, right? Is that what you're telling me? And they'd say, yes. And I'd say, okay, then you explain to me why there are 1.73 billion Asians living on rice-based diets and none of them are overweight.
Right.
No, I'd just throw it back in their lap. People argue intensively about their own personal habits. They protect their personal eating habits as if they were more important than their ancestry. It's hard for folks. And, of course, there's some vested interests out there, people who are selling all these rich foods. That's where you make your money. You make your money in the meats and cheeses. You don't make them in potatoes. And also there are vested interests in there. I don't think they know it. I don't think they purposely do it. But they're, oh, yeah, I do. At one level, they purposely do it. And that is, you know, the medical businesses, the hospitals and the doctors, they could put a stop to this if they knew a little bit more and were willing to take action against their own personal salaries. And I don't think they are. You know, the people who do heart surgery are not breaking their necks to learn what causes heart disease and share it with the public. You know, they'll tell you, well, my job is to operate on the heart. That's what I do. My job is not to tell people how to prevent heart disease or how to cure it with a good diet. My job is to fix the plumbing. You know, same thing with the urologist. You know, when you get kidney stones and they ask, why did you get kidney stones? The answer is because of the high animal protein diet. The urologist says, hey, it's not my job to tell you that. My job is to take and crush your kidney stones and take them out. So the medical business has no vested interest in getting people healthy. And, you know, quite honestly, John, I can't say it any more kindly. The doctors are at fault because they have not done what I consider their duty, which is to help their patients the most they can, regardless of financial interests. Financial interests overweigh you know, the truth, sad to say. We've got people right. who are really sick, and the problem's the food, not the fact that they're overstressed or they're lazy or they don't exercise or, you know, that there are some studies that have been manipulated to show something different. The problem is the human being is fed the wrong kind of diet. So, you know, the problem's real simple. The solution's real simple. You just got to open your eyes and you can see it. It's undeniable. And, you know, people who argue with you, and I wish more would argue with me, John, you just have to just lay the facts on the line with them. And they'll say, oh, well, we have our studies. And, well, you don't. You know, your studies are heavily manipulated and don't show what we're really interested in.
That's right. That's what we try to do here on this program. Well, John, we have about a minute left in the program already. And let's talk a little bit about the book, The Starch Solution.
Yeah,
and
the Starch Solution.
And you've got it published by Rodale, of course, one of the leading publishers in health and nutrition. Tell us about the book and what people can find in the book to help them to better health.
Well, of course, it's focused on starch and explains to people why starch has been villainized. It talks to you, there's a chapter that's entitled, When Your Friends Ask, Where Do You Get Your Protein? And When Your Friends Ask, Where Do You Get Your Calcium? And there's a chapter on the fat vegan, which talks about why vegetarians, very interested in good health, are often fat and sick. There's a chapter called Confessions of a Fish Killer. Back when you knew me in the early days, John, I was a fish killer, and
yes.
I don't do that anymore.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of really interesting, really directs the attention to where people need to be.
Okay. Well, once again, it's The Starch Solution, written by Dr. John A. McDougall, and, of course, co-authored by his wife, Mary McDougall, so I'm sure she has some great recipes in there.
She does.
And it's available in all the bookstores very shortly here. And we'll also make it available on our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. And Dr. McDougall, for those that want to learn more about the McDougall program and your live-in lifestyle program and other information, how do they get a hold of you and what's your website?
The website's easiest. DrMcDougall.com, spelled DrMcDougall.com.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. McDougall, for being with us today on Health and Longevity.
Thank you. Great to talk to you again, John.
Good talking with you.
Bye-bye.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
That's all for this week's program, and I encourage you to tune in next week to Health and Longevity. And until then, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.